Hi, guys. We want to thank our great sponsor, Legion M. They are the first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They create really incredible experiences for people. If you're someone who wants to feel like you own a piece and are a piece of the industry, it's a great way to do it. They do meetups all over the country. They have a really cool community going online. I cannot recommend them enough. Go to legionm.com for more information.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and we are very pleased today to have as our guest Jackie Weaver.
Hello. I'm very pleased to be here.
And you're welcome that you all get to listen to this accent for the next hour.
Do you want me to talk American? I can.
Please don't. Please be your wonderful Australian self. No. It drives me nuts. We always laugh about this. You'll watch a movie and you've got 47 people from different places and they all speak English better than we do. You just go,
I don't think that's true. I love American English. I love America. I won't hear a word against it.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
There's only one thing wrong with you people.
Okay.
You drive on the wrong side of the road.
That is true. Yes. That is fair. Yes. That is fair. Yes.
And it does take some adjustment, I'm sure.
It does. It makes jousting much harder, I'll tell you right now.
Yes, that's right. Apparently that's where it all came from.
That's what they say. Mm. They say it's a jousting thing.
Really?
Did you not know?
No, I didn't know
that. A day without knowledge.
It's like a day without sunshine.
That's right.
I'm learning something.
It's jousting. That's what it's supposed to come from.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, next time I see a wreck on the... Never mind.
We also don't have roundabouts, which drives most of the United States. We are roundaboutless.
Yes, roundabouts.
So we don't
know
that terror of everyone going free for all. But
now,
yes.
When you came here for your Oscar nomination for...
no big deal.
For Animal Kingdom, was that your first trip to America?
Oh, God, no. No, I've been an Americophile my whole life, going back to the first time I went to the movies when I was 3 years old. And it was a double feature. It was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and Bambi. And I cried all the way through.
I was going to say.
But I was addicted to the movies ever since. So I've been going to the movies about as long as you have, Leonard. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was an Esther Williams freak when I was a little girl. And
did you want to be a bathing beauty?
Oh, God, yes. Like, and I'm a terrible swimmer.
You don't have to be a good swimmer. You can just do the arms, and it looks fine.
Now, what's your favorite Esther Williams movie?
Dangerous When Wet. Oh, well, Neptune's Daughter and Million Dollar Mermaid.
Yeah,
they're
all good.
Good.
Those are all
they're
good ones.
They're all good.
Million Dollar Mermaid. Oh.
And I had the pleasure. Did you ever get to meet her?
I met her. She invited me over for tea.
Oh, my God.
Is she a hoot? She was just
She's
a hoot.
She's adorable.
How did
she
that happen?
She wanted me to stay. Well, I did an interview when I first arrived with an American paper, and I said how much I loved her and how I had been drummed out of the Brownies for going to an Esther Williams festival because I took my shilling 3 weeks in a row to see all these Esther Williams films. And I was only about six or seven, and they found out. And the Brown Owl said, the Bexley chapter has no place for a deceitful brownie. So I started on a life of crime very early.
But I was going to say, please let that be your book, though.
Was it?
Jackie Weaver, Deceitful Brownie. That's so perfect. Oh, my
but
God.
But Esther read this and it invited me over. And I went to her place and it was organized by her girlfriend. And we had a lovely time. She wanted me to sleep over and she wanted me to go skinny dipping in the pool. I said, at my age, I don't. She said, oh, I do, still. And after I'd been there about 2 or 3 hours, she said, honey, remind me why you're here again. And her husband said, oh, sweetheart, remember Jackie has loved you all her life and she's just been nominated for an Oscar. And Esther said, oh, honey, I was never nominated for an Oscar. But she nearly went to the Olympic Games.
I was going to say, and she was cheated out of her Olympic
glory. That's how good she
because
was.
Because of the war. Yeah, she would have been an Olympian for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful, so beautiful.
Oh, my God.
She had to settle for being a world famous movie star.
Yeah, right.
But you asked about my coming to America. Yes. I've been coming regularly to America since 1972 was my first time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because I've always been a theater actor. You know, I've done 73 plays, mm-hmm. and I've only done 53 films.
Mm-hmm. So
I used to come every year to New York and do about 3 weeks of theater going. Mm-hmm. And the best I ever did was 30 shows in 3 weeks, because you can do 7 nights and 3 matinees if you work it all out properly. And I was always such a snob about Los Angeles, much as I love the movies. I always said, I'm not interested in LA, no, I'm a New York girl. Well, I came to live here 9 years ago. I love Los Angeles so much. I think it is a wonderful city.
It is.
Yeah.
I like it here. I'm
a native New Yorker.
Yeah.
And a transplant of almost 36 years now.
Oh.
And my wife and I both. And
they moved here for 2 years and forgot to leave.
Yeah.
That's literally.
We feel that all the New York cliches about L.A. are true, and all the LA cliches about New York are also true. Now, of course, these cliches are not literally true. They're based on a kernel of truth, and then there's some exaggeration. But by and large, there's a reason that people feel the way they do.
Yeah, that old Woody Allen gag about... Mm-hmm.
the only advantage is being able to turn right on a red light, yes.
But he also used to say, when it's 3 below 0 in New York, it's 78 in California.
That's right.
When it's 100 degrees in the shade, it's 78 in California. And there are 10,000 interesting people in New York and 78 in California.
I'd like to argue with that, but I think it's accurate.
I don't think it's
true. You must have seen some outstanding performances and shows.
I have.
And your theater going adventures.
Now you're going to ask me who. I can't think of it.
My mom, remember, grew up in the Bronx.
Oh.
But so she saw Ethel Merman in Gypsy. She saw Yul Brynner.
Wow.
So she's one of those people where, in terms of my jealousy, which is boundless, those kind of things, to be able to say, oh, you know, I did. They saw Nicholas Nickleby when it came through.
Oh, we saw the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Right, I saw that too in London.
We chose to do it over 2 nights.
Yes.
And did you do a full day or 2 nights?
I did a full day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but we had an equally wonderful production in Australia. The theatre culture in Australia is much like New York or London.
Yes.
You know, our musicals go for 2 years, and I was in there playing our song, the Neil Simon... Mm-hmm. Marvin Hamlisch musical. Mm-hmm. I did 550 performances of that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so but speaking of the Bronx, I played Billy Dawn in Born Yesterday for about 300 performances.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah,
wow.
So I've been American all my life.
You have.
Before
yeah,
I came. You have.
And I've done, you know, Tennessee Williams and Arthur Miller and
Now, is it tradition in Australia to tour the provinces, as they say in England?
A lot of shows do tour.
Mm-hmm.
I've played 82 venues in Australia. It's hard to believe there would be that many.
I was going to say.
Some of them are teeny tiny.
And some of them are just for the koalas.
I'm sorry. You know, they look cuter than they really
are. They're mean. No, they're mean.
They urinate on you.
That's true.
I was going to say pee, but you're much higher class people.
Yes.
Oh, darling,
thank you. You're very kind. It's a kind assumption on your part.
Right. The theater in Australia is incredible.
It's pretty good.
And something I appreciate is when someone like Cate Blanchett became famous, one of the things she talked about the most was how important theater was there.
Yeah.
And for my Australian friends, that meant the world, because they were getting... you often hear that Australians are frustrated because a lot of people don't take tours all the way over. A lot of musicians won't go all the way over. So when they do, it's a very appreciative crowd.
Yeah.
They said, thank you for schlepping.
We're good audiences.
You are.
We don't stand up as much as Americans.
We have this conversation. A standing ovation is only a standing ovation if it happens every now and then.
Exactly.
If you stand up for everything.
It ought to be reserved for those exceptional performances.
If you stand up for everything, you stand up for nothing. That's like if every single performance gets a stand-up.
I'm glad you think that.
We're in the minority, though.
Our family.
We're old school.
In that sense. If I've seen something great, I will stand up and
jump.
Cheer.
Yeah, me too. I'll jump up real quick.
But I won't do it if it's a gradual standing ovation.
Yeah, you gotta love that.
Some people start and then other people feel obliged to join in. That's the worst kind of standing ovation.
Confused. All right, I guess.
Sure.
Now, do you think you have a preference?
Well, I haven't done a play now, speaking of Cate Blanchett, since the Uncle Vanya that she did and that came to New York. And Ben Brantley said it was one of the three greatest nights he'd ever spent in the theater.
Oh, my God.
And we did it at the I don't know what they call it. It usually does operas now. It's a 56th Street. It's like a
city
big,
center?
That's it. And it's big. It's a couple of thousand.
Big barn of a place.
And, but I was fascinated to find that that's where, in 1945, Paul Robeson did Othello with... I don't know if it was Tallulah Bankhead but whoever he did it with, the theater in 1945 was picketed because a black man was kissing a white woman on stage. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe it was that recent.
Well, it's.
But important to remember.
Yeah, I'll say. But I got goosebumps being on that stage
thinking of
the history.
Oh, sure. Well,
see, that's the only thing that can come even kind of close in movie terms is certain lots that have history. So if you're at Paramount and you're where Lucille Ball did everything did, or, you know, there are certain spots that definitely have that.
Singing in the Rain.
But theater is a whole other monster, and to be in there and the venues, it is a religious experience. People say going to the theater is like a religious experience.
I think all my dozens and dozens and dozens, without exaggeration, trips to New York was a spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know, I got those goosebumps you're talking about. I did a film in Berlin, and we filmed in Babelsberg.
Mm. Wow!
And you could feel. You could feel the ghosts of the wonderful filmmaking that went on there.
Wild. That's wild.
Yeah. Have you been to Berlin? What a great place.
One of my dream spots.
On our bucket list.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. Definitely on our bucket list.
I think I may be making another film in Berlin soon.
I'll go in your suitcase. It'll be fine.
Okay.
It'll be great, yes.
I could do with a girlfriend there.
I mean, I could be free. No, it's... So for you, do you have a preference, you think, or is it just...
Well...
All of it.
I'm just so thrilled that I'm getting all this film work. Since Animal Kingdom, 9 years ago, I've done 25 films. And and only four of them were in Australia. That's not true. Anyway, whatever. I've done, and I just keep getting offered so much lovely
work here. I wonder why she was...
Well, you know, it's not a guarantee.
No, nothing.
No, of course not.
A woman my age,
yeah.
No spring chicken, and
you're better than a spring chicken. That's the thing, though. We were talking about it. It is an incredible thing when a performance does something like that, where people saw Animal Kingdom and went, "Okay, we keep her now.
And
she belongs to us."
And the great thing is, I haven't been pigeonholed. People keep giving me sorts of different characters.
Yeah. Quite a wide range of characters.
It's been great fun. Yeah. You know, I haven't been typecast at all.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, that's... I family moments. My mom got to meet you when you were doing all of your tours during Oscar time. And she came home, she goes, "Oh my God, Jess, she's fabulous. Oh, you just
did
love
she?
Her. Oh my God. She was everything I wanted
love
her to
be." Love at
first
sight.
It really was. And so it's the kind of thing where that wonderful rooting happens. And you just sort of go, "Yes, I want you to be in everything, and I'm so excited." And
that's lovely.
But I think that's a big piece of it, is when you did come out, people may be ageist at times, but the truth is, you know more. You've been through more.
Well, yeah.
So you come with this, with gravitas, and you come with...
I don't know about gravitas.
No, it's true. I promise it's true. But you come in with that, and also the ability to appreciate the situation. You know, it's...
Yeah, that's all true.
Yeah.
What you're saying is true. When you get old, you sort of forget what you know, and then you think, of course, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your knowledge... For one thing, I always say getting old means you know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're young, you think you know a lot more
than
you do.
Yeah.
But also you forget what you know and it comes back.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, experience. That's
experience.
What you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is, but it's a wonderful memory, I think, for everybody when you hit.
When did you know that you wanted to act? How young were you when?
Oh, I was a little tiny girl,
mm-hmm.
probably back in the Bambi days.
Mm-hmm.
I was, as soon as I could talk, I was imitating people and imitating accents and making up stories and telling lies, I guess. I was always pretending to be someone else. I used to... It was my favorite thing to do, and my parents were really good about it. They just thought I was really eccentric, a very odd little girl. And I'd go in shops and pretend I was French or Italian.
I love that. I love that.
Weird little girl.
So did you go to an acting school?
I had lots of acting teachers, mm-hmm. yeah. I went to a few different. I didn't go to... NIDA, the big one, because by the time I was the right age, I was already working. Because I did my first professional job when I was 15. I played Cinderella in a big, lavish sort of children's rendition of Cinderella. And then from then on, I got TV acting jobs. And so 15 when I started, and this month I'll be 72. So how long has that I've been acting? 57 years.
Mm-hmm. I don't math, but I trust you.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Close enough to jazz.
Yeah. So
amazing.
Yeah, I had lots of lessons. Yeah, lots of great teachers.
Oh, how fortunate for you! People who made a difference to you.
Yeah, I think it was. It was a teacher that first taught me the whole concept of not pretending to be someone but becoming someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of Meisner. It's kind of fairly common.
Sanford Meisner's technique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I no longer live a character 24 hours a day like I sometimes did in my youth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way of craziness. But I do, I do like to get as deep as possible into what makes a person tick and what makes why they say certain things. I'm also very, this comes from the theatre, I'm very cognizant of text. I love writers and I like to respect exactly what they've written. So I can do improv, and I often do, because especially in America they like you sometimes to improvise.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So my favorite thing is when you do the script exactly how he wrote it, because I know how writers can agonize over a comma or one word, and I think you should give
respect.
Them a shot.
Yeah.
Let them see. So I like to film the first couple of takes exactly as the script, and then if the director wants, then fiddle around with it however he wants.
If there are any screenwriters listening to you right now, they
want to kiss your feet.
They are falling in love with you, Jackie. I promise they are. Have you ever done David Mamet?
No, I haven't, but I love him. He sent me a fan letter one time.
Did he? Oh, my God.
Yeah, my husband's a brilliant actor. He's the best actor in the family. But he's done David Mamet.
Because he is so precise, and of course he does those partial sentences. Yes, those all stuttering
really
type.
Hard.
If I could, it would be something where if I could do the, but I'm not sure that I want to. Oh my God, no, yes. I don't even know.
So
I don't know how you.
So hard. You just got to keep doing it by rote until you've got it automatically.
Yeah.
You were asking about this before when we were talking about your different films. My dad said, I wonder what it was like when you were with Ben Falcone and Melissa McCarthy.
They are so gorgeous.
They are.
I love them so much.
That goals thing. You know, they're goals. They're wonderful.
She is such a brilliant improviser.
She's a genius.
Yeah. So.
And he's very clever too.
He is.
So did they invite you in?
There's no kind of competition. He's so proud of her, and he's a really clever chap himself. It's a wonderful partnership.
So did they encourage you to join in the improvisation?
Yeah. It was the same. We would do it as scripted. And then I'm not saying I'm in the same league as Melissa when it comes to improv. She's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed that. It was a very, very happy set. And you know, when I did a Woody Allen film, and he said to me, if there is anything that you don't like the way it's phrased and you'd like to change it, feel free. And I thought, Woody Allen, you don't change his script. And I felt no need. I did it. I thought it was so good.
But what an interesting, because I would think most people wouldn't think that would be something he would do.
Yeah.
I think in a generalized sort of, I'm sure he wants exactly it. No, so that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I was surprised. Yeah.
So you'd done television in Australia.
A lot of TV.
Quite a lot of TV. Yeah. And several series where you were regular co-star in series. And if I'm right, your first film was a success and put you sort of on the map on the big screen. And got you an award from the Australian Film Institute.
You've done some research.
I've done my homework, as you say. But so that must have been a nice feeling.
It was fantastic. Well, it was very early days in the burgeoning, the sort of, we call it the renaissance of the Australian film industry, because we had been in the doldrums a bit with films.
Yes, I was telling Jessie about it because she's too young to have experienced it. But my wife and I recall vividly how exciting it was that there were all these great new films coming from Australia, of all places.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we hadn't really been terribly aware of Australian films.
No, it kind of went totally away. And we had some really good filmmakers. And they didn't get the encouragement from the government. It was a very conservative government for a long time who thought filmmaking was a frivolous enterprise, not realizing that it's a major industry and important one.
And you're in one of the key. Well, I want to go back to Stork in just a moment.
Yeah.
But you were in one of the key films of that Renaissance, which is Picnic at Hanging Rock.
That's right,
Peter Weir's film. And
the cult following is still. I mean, it's
amazing. It's they still
huge.
Play it in New York at the Met. The Metropolitan.
Yeah.
But in looking up all this stuff, when I read about Stork, it said it was the first of the Ocker comedies.
Well, it's kind of primitive.
Well, tell us what Ocker means.
Ocker is just a slang word for an Aussie, an Australian, or a very rough one.
Ah.
An Ocker. He's, he's kind of redneckish and a bit of a bogan, we say.
I love one of my favorite words.
And it was written by probably our most prolific playwright, David Williamson, who's written must be 50 plays, and they always strike a chord with the middle class in Australia, because they're very good at at portraying what mm-hmm. what goes on. They're very, yeah. He's a bit out of fashion, and snobs don't like him in the same way that Neil Simon was mm-hmm. not appreciated.
Neil Simon was taken for granted by everyone
and
but the audience.
David Williamson, yes.
That's an old phrase that's been applied to others too. Nobody loved them but the audiences.
Yes, that's exactly right about David Williamson. Mm-hmm. I know he won't mind my saying that because I think he's found it frustrating over the years but mm-hmm. and cried all the way to the bank.
Right.
to steal from Liberace. But yeah, he wrote Stalk, and it was about some knockabout blokes, but they were all university educated, like David Williamson was,
mm-hmm.
and they were very bright, but you know, they had broad Australian accents and they were kind of vulgar. And but I get cross when his stuff is put in with the sexploitation, because that mm-hmm. was a different thing again. That was yeah. some other stuff like mm-hmm. Alvin Purple and. Mm-hmm. Stuff, awful stuff like that.
And then there was a period. You made Caddy, which was another successful film, which also got you recognition from the Australian Film Institute.
Yeah.
And that's when we started learning the names and learning the faces of, you know, some of the leading players like Jack Thompson.
Yes.
You know, and then at a certain point you say, well, wait a minute, are there only 7 actors in all of Australia?
Yes.
Rachel Griffiths and Colin Friels and Tony Collette and Ben Mendelsohn and David Wenham.
Yes.
And a little later, Nicole Kidman.
Sure.
And it's like they must run into each other coming and going all the time.
And yet there are 25 million of us.
That's right.
But, you know, speaking of Caddy, one of my most favourite actresses in Australia, Helen Morse, played mm-hmm. Caddy. Now, she could have had a big career. She was offered lots of stuff in Hollywood and mm-hmm. in England. And she preferred to stay. She's still doing really good work on stage
mm-hmm.
and beautiful. She's so beautiful. But, yeah, she sort of hid her light under a bushel a bit,
uh-huh.
which I thought was sad for, not her, if that's what she wanted. But
for us.
Yeah, for yeah. you. Yeah. I think yeah. more people deserved to see her.
Now, tell us about the tall poppy syndrome, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it happens in almost every country except America.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the great things about America. People are so egging you on to be your best.
Mm.
There's a very wonderful generosity of spirit. I mean, you get your knockers and your haters.
That's everywhere.
Yeah,
that's everywhere.
You get those everywhere. But, you know, a prophet in his own country, it happens in Scandinavia. It happens especially in England.
Oh, yes.
And and we are sort of the colony of England in Australia, and we started out as convicts, certainly on my side, and it's seeing people get too big for their boots, you mm-hmm. know.
Yes.
And now and again, it's necessary to stop them being. To say, I mean, parents should teach. Michael Caine, I heard him say this. My mother taught me that I'm not better than anybody, but nobody's better than me.
Mm.
And it's a good way
that's
to
such
teach
a mom
your
thing,
children.
Though.
Yeah.
Can you do a Michael Caine impression?
No, I can't. My husband would do it for me. I wish he was here, but he's in Swaziland.
Oh.
Which is now called Eswatini because apparently too many American tourists were turning up in Swaziland thinking they were going to Switzerland.
Oh, my God. So can you imagine getting off the plane? People are just going,
it's very hot for Switzerland.
I am here for the Alps.
No.
I am here for the Alps and I am confused. Oh, my God.
That's probably an urban
myth. Really funny. Really funny.
I was thinking about Wendy Hughes also.
Oh,
who
was, beautiful.
Yes,
beautiful actress.
So talented.
Yes, so good.
Died much too young.
Yes, yeah. Bless.
Yeah. But she never did really hit it big here in the States. She did come over and do some work here.
Mm.
but didn't enjoy the success.
I was always surprised about that.
Yeah.
Because she had everything. She had the looks and the talent.
Yeah.
But that's...
There's a lot of luck, you know. A lot of luck involved.
Of course. As in any... In any life or any field of endeavor.
Any line.
Absolutely.
But certainly show business gets inspected a little more carefully.
Yeah.
And so we see evidence of it more blatantly, perhaps. But how could you have ever predicted that playing that wonderful part, that incredible part you play in Animal Kingdom, would bring you not only recognition, but an Oscar nomination and a whole new page, a whole new chapter in your life and career?
Oh, yes. I'm still overwhelmed 9 years later. I still think how lucky I am. And that's why I want to keep going, you know, as long as I can.
Yeah.
Like Betty White. I mean, she's 25 years older than I am.
She's a perfect example to me of if you stay... I don't even think hungry is the word for her. I think that if you stay excited and passionate and you keep that sort of a childlike in the best way, excitement, that, you know, so for
enthusiasm.
All of us, that's it. All of us, when we see her, we smile.
Yes.
That's the best thing you could hope for at any age, but certainly being older, the fact that everyone loves you and everyone thinks you're the greatest thing, and it's because she's so... willing. She has the old school mentality, first of all, where she's happy to take photos and sign autographs, and she's very warm. She understands that when we meet her, we love her. It's not just a fan, you love her. And she's so generous in that way, in how she responds to fans.
Yeah,
but
it's true.
You know, but it is. That's what you want. You want that, you know, as reputations go, it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Well, you know? As long as Americans keep offering me work, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
As long as I put one foot in front of the other.
Sure. Now, you're not supposed to judge a character when you play one.
No, I don't.
So how did you see that woman, that matriarch of that horrific family in Animal Kingdom?
Well, you know, the one it's based on is far worse.
Oh, really?
It's loosely based on a true story. And the woman's still around, and she had... I think it was 10 sons by 10 different fathers, and she ran sly grog and prostitution and standover and drugs, and she was, and 5 or 6 of her sons died in jail, and she was responsible for a lot of murders. She was, you know, Ma Baker had nothing on her. She was really the worst of the worst. So it was tricky. I read quite a bit about sociopaths, which is obviously what she was, and how they don't have a conscience, and how the way they con people is by seeming pleasant and normal, like your Ted Bundy, you know, and they care about how they present themselves and so on. No, that was a fascinating experience. And you're so right about non-judgment. I think that's one of my best attributes for my work, is that I kind of certainly there are people I think who are hideous.
Yeah.
We won't go into that. Yeah. But it's not in my nature to judge people for anything other than, I don't like thieves or murderers or people who are cruel to children.
But, it's fair.
As far as everything else goes, my young friends always say to me, the reason we tell you everything is because we know we won't get any judgment. And I think that, I'm not saying this to say I'm a wonderful person, but I think that helps with my work, because I am able to...
Sure.
...to make up a person without saying, ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the fact that David Michaud, who wrote and directed that film, was a journalist.
Yes. First of all, he was an English major. In English literature, he got his degree. Then he became a film journalist. And then he edited a film magazine. Mm-hmm. And then he thought, I want to make my own films. and
Well, he hit that one out of the park, as you say. Yeah.
Yeah, for a debut, it was pretty good.
And then, do you know how David O. Russell came to choose you? Was it as a direct result of Animal Kingdom?
No, he made me. I was doing Uncle Vanya in New York, and he made me go to Philadelphia to talk to him. Mm-hmm. Not to audition. He wanted to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine who was also in the play and my husband, we drove from New York to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And David kept me there for hours. And we only just made it back for the show. But he wanted me to show how I could improvise. He wanted to talk to me. But I love David. He is so unusual. He's someone where you would do the script as written and then you'd improvise. But you do like, he'd light it so the camera could move around all the time, and you'd do 15-minute takes. It was extraordinary. And he'd be shouting lines at you what to say. Oh, I love him. He's wonderful. That can rattle you, that kind
yes.
of thing,
well,
when
I
you're
think.
Trying
as someone who's a stage-trained actress, of course.
but it's good for you. It's good for centering yourself and staying on the ball.
Well, it's almost like an athlete being traded to different teams with different coaches.
Yeah.
Because to me, I always think about that it's got to be a crazy thing to walk into a room. We speak to friends of ours who direct TV, where they come in and out. We always say, what is that like? Because you come into a family that's set up.
Yeah, sure.
On the other hand, with a film, a family is put together and created, and you as the actor have to figure out how to work with the other actors.
Sure.
And then you have to figure out with the director, what are they like? What do they want? You know, are they a Clint Eastwood, where they sort of grunt to let you know it's starting, and maybe they tell you it's stopped, maybe they don't. Maybe he's just left.
And you only get one take. Ooh.
But that's it.
So
that's
you better
it.
Do a good first take.
Yeah.
And you should hope that you know he's filming, because that's the one thing you hear more and more. He goes, oh, we didn't even know he was filming. He just apparently said, no, I got it. Don't worry about it.
Tell us about working with and opposite and close to Robert De Niro.
Oh, what does he smell like is what we're trying to ask. I want to know.
No, I adore him. I just adore him. I didn't really get to know him very well, but he is a master at what he does. I love him. Mm-hmm. And it was an incredible honor. I was in bed with him.
Yeah, you were.
But he had his jammies on.
You see, you could just leave that bit out, though. That's the important part. I've been in bed with him.
But it was a privilege to watch the wheels turning, watch how he, you know, his MO. He's amazing. So is Bradley, you know, and Jennifer. It was an amazing experience.
Well, and you're all on top of your game in that movie.
Yeah,
you're all giving 100%.
That was the first time in 30 years that all four acting categories were nominated in the Oscars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The previous time, I think, was Reds. Mm-hmm. They got every category, acting category nomination.
Incredible.
But that was... And then David did it again the following year.
Yeah.
With,
American Hustle.
Yeah.
The actor whisperer.
Yeah, right? Man. Do you have a preference? See, you seem like the kind of person who just goes with whatever the hell they walk into. But do you like having notes? Do you like sort of just going for it?
If they want to give me notes, I'm happy. I love it. But if they
don't... You're the dream. You're the dream for them. I will say your words exactly as you wish. I will stand wherever you want me to.
Well, most directors... are really good, or they wouldn't have the movie.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I haven't in the 25 films I've done since 53 altogether.
Yeah.
I haven't really met a director right here that I thought wasn't any good.
Wow. Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
And it really is encouraging.
Or maybe I have low standards.
Now you play.
No, it's good. It's a good thing. It's better to walk in with your mentality than to sort of say, oh, crap, here we go.
Yeah.
Parkland is a film that Jesse and I both like and think was kind of underrated.
Oh, how such nice. A good film.
That is so nice. nice to hear.
Such a good film.
I think it's a good film, too.
We recommend it constantly. We got to have Billy Bob on the show, and that was one of the first things we talked to him about. He's amazing.
Yes.
But that whole cast, incredible top to bottom.
And if you don't know the film, folks, we're talking about Parkland, written and directed by Peter Landesman. It came out in 2013.
Yeah.
And it's about the aftermath of JFK's assassination.
And they were in Dallas. Parkland, Texas.
At Parkland Hospital.
Parkland Hospital. Yes. So it was the point of view of the players, of the people in the hospital.
Yeah. The doctors, the
It's a remarkable film. And you are remarkable in playing Lee Harvey Oswald's mother.
I watched videotapes of her being interviewed. She had a really strange accent. It was a mixture of New York and Texas, and so I tried to do it exactly as she spoke. That was very interesting, and I thought that was a good film.
It was an excellent film,
and nobody saw it. It was a shame, but that also has the distinction of the most interviews I've ever done in one day.
Really?
It was when we showed it at Toronto.
Oh, sure.
At the film festival. I did 68 interviews in one day. I did 41.
Do you remember, or were you told afterwards?
I went back and counted them off the schedule.
My goodness.
Yeah. Well, because, some people, when you do that junket thing, some people only get 5 minutes.
Sure.
Or some get 3 minutes. Yeah. So I count those as interviews.
They are interviews.
They are. They're interviews, absolutely.
They exist.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yes, the publicity is often harder work than the actual acting.
Yes, it seems that way. My goodness. Boy, well, they got their money's worth out of
that
day.
This is nice.
Good. We like the relaxed bit. But I always think, when we do speak to someone when they're on that trail of doing all the interviews, I can't imagine, because suddenly you're having to have reasons for everything you do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
in scene three, why did you drink the water in that way? You go, I don't know, I picked up the glass.
Did I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I have had only the barest taste of that, but I was on a book promotion tour many years ago, and it was much less grueling than what you're telling us about. But I remember having a kind of an out-of-body experience with myself saying, did I already say this?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes.
Did I say this to this guy, or did I say that to the last person?
Yeah.
How you keep it straight.
And a whole, day after day of talking about yourself, you start thinking, I am so boring.
You do get kind of tired of it.
Yeah, I'm a useless person. Why would anyone want to talk to me? Because you get so sick of your own voice.
Well, apparently 4,067 people did in Toronto. So all of them wanted to hear from you. That is another monster. It's a whole other, the publicity, the tours that you guys do now. I mean, really, it is kind of funny that the biggest one started with a campaign for an Oscar, because that's the madness. That's like king of the madness. I honestly don't know how a lot of you do it. I really don't, because it's wild and overwhelming. And I'm not doing it, and it's overwhelming.
But You want the film to succeed as much as anyone.
Of course,
you do.
Especially after
I do it cheerfully, because I think I care about the film.
Again,
especially
you're
someone who invests in the film.
Yeah,
you invest
heart and
in
soul.
Your performance. Yeah. You want to see it pay off.
Sure.
Now, in terms of doing research for any kind of project,
how much cocaine did you have to do before you understood who you were?
No. No, I'm going to ask how many times you had
a few
to see...
Chardonnays.
Just a couple. Just a few.
How many times did you have to watch The Room before making The Disaster Artist?
Well, James Franco said, I want you to do The Disaster Artist, but I want you to watch The Room. Here's a tape of it, a DVD. Take it home and watch it. And I took it home and I said to Sean, my husband, tonight we're going to watch the worst film ever made. And he said, I don't believe that. I've seen some really bad films. So we watched it, and when it finished, he said, that is the worst film that's ever been made.
Well, Sean, this was not a joke.
And the cult that's built up around it, I think, is a bit It's almost
it's nutty.
It's yeah,
Emperor's
it's
New
Schadenfreude.
Clothes. I call it Emperor's New
film,
Clothes.
Yeah, it's film students being able to say, ah, somebody's made something worse than I could ever do. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of that, and it's kind of. Yeah, I couldn't watch it again. It's terrible.
Once is
plenty.
But
I do think The Disaster Artist is clever.
Oh, fun.
I love the end bit at the credits when we're all doing the same scene.
Yes.
To a lot of trouble to make it exactly the same.
And did you have a good simpatico with James?
Oh, I love him. Yeah. He's lovely. Really lovely.
Because you've made another film with him, which hasn't come out yet.
I wish that would come out. That would interest you because of your film knowledge, because mm-hmm. it's based on Zeroville. Did you read Zeroville? He's also a film critic. Steve Erickson, I think he was a critic for the LA Times or something. But yes, you would be interested in Zeroville because I found the book fantastic, written by Steve Erickson about some strange people in it, and it's all about the greatest films that have ever been made. I strongly recommend you read it.
Cool.
It's
yeah.
so good. And the film's based on that.
Wow.
A man has got tattooed on his head that beautiful, you know, the poster with Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift.
Mm-hmm.
Is it A Place in the
Place
Sun?
In the Sun.
Yes.
And he's got that tattooed on his head, the lead character.
Ow.
And James had that
of course
all the
he
way
did.
Through.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
I'm dying to see that film, and I play one of the legendary, a kind of amalgamation of all the legendary female editors, film editors.
Wow.
A combination of, you know, it's Thelma and it's...
Dee Dee Allen.
Yes,
and
it's
Verna
kind of...
Verna Fields and all those ladies.
A chain smoker and got glasses and a...
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited.
I love doing that.
I mean, reading about it interested us anyway,
yeah.
but that sounds really neat.
And it sort of keeps popping its head up and then disappearing again.
I'm certainly curious about that one for sure.
Yeah.
But there's one playing in theaters right now.
Right now.
The people can actually go and pay the price of admission and see, and that's Palms.
Yes, and take your mother.
You can borrow all mine. I'll give you my Alice.
Take anybody's mother.
You go.
But what a sweet idea.
And it is a lovely idea. Excuse me. Sorry. Zara Hayes, an English girl whose strength was making documentaries and it's given her a really good eye for authenticity in acting.
Yeah.
And she read about this troupe of ladies in their 70s and 80s who started a cheerleading team in Arizona. And she thought, what a great story. And then she thought it would be good to follow some of their characters. And so she invited me to coffee a few years, like 3 or 4 years before we even started filming, and told me the premise of the story and how there was a sad lady and an extroverted lady. And after she finished, I said, I'd love to be attached. I suppose you want me to play the sad lady. She said, no, I want you to play the gregarious extrovert. I said, I'll give that a shot. Well, I've never smiled so much in a film in my entire life. And it's... The thing about, I've seen it twice now, and I think it's a beautiful film. It's not just a silly comedy about old ladies being cheerleaders. It's got something to say about female empowerment. And I was attracted because the protagonists are all female, and that's quite unusual.
Oh, yeah.
And we are 52% of the population in this room. We're 75%.
That's right. he's so used to it. Bless him. He's so used to it.
So what else is new?
Yeah.
And it says, but the Palms also has a lot to say about friendship and about feeling relevant at once you passed a certain age, and about love ultimately. Mm. And it's my husband, who's a tough guy. He laughed hilariously at a lot of Palms, but he also had a few tears. Mm. So it like I love films that are like life, that you're crying one minute and you're laughing the next.
Yeah. And I love your look in the film.
Oh, my God.
Oh, don't I look outrageous?
You look great.
Yes.
Oh, but it's wonderful. Did you devise that look?
Oh, no, we had a really young, Amanda was our costume designer, and mm-hmm. The first day I turned up for a costume fitting, it took 5 hours, and there were something like 100 outfits, and they were all outrageous.
I love it.
Yeah.
But your hairstyle, too. I mean, everything is...
Oh, yeah, that wonderful red hair I had. Yeah. No, I had good fun doing poems. And Diane Keaton, you know,
oh my God,
it's so
just...
adorable. She is Annie Hall, only better. She's so sweet and adorable. The world adores her.
Isn't that lovely?
Including me. Yeah.
Isn't that lovely? Those people that, I mean, she is.
And Rhea Perlman. She's in Pearl. Mm-hmm. And then Pam Grier. What a legend.
Exactly. Yeah. Badass. Yes. You open up dictionary. Badass. Pam Grier.
Yep.
No, that's the whole cast. See, this is one of those where when we get press releases, you know, and you're reading through, and sometimes something will just sound like a documentary. Oh, it sounds interesting. Okay. And then you see this list of people, you say, oh my God, they're really in one, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because so many good people and talented, and yet people need to be reminded that age really is a number.
Yeah.
It shouldn't matter.
Yeah. There's too much ageism in our culture.
For sure.
Older is supposed to make you more valuable. That's the thing. Older should be more valuable. You've done more, you've
and
seen more.
In some cultures, especially some Asian cultures, they revere their old people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My mother always used to say, we are the same as the 21-year-olds. We just got here sooner.
That's good.
I like that.
That's good.
I like that.
I hope this doesn't come out wrong as just a dumb interview question. I really don't mean it that way.
All right.
But you have now worked, in just recent years, you've worked with quite a number of female directors.
I have, yes.
And do you discern a difference in the way they work with you or the way they treat your fellow actors?
Well, I should, shouldn't I?
Not necessarily.
When there's the estrogen thing... But no, I think of them the same way I think of male directors. Mm-hmm. They've got a vision, and I want to help them achieve that mm-hmm. vision. And I'm fascinated by their notes and their direct what they have to say and how they want to. Some people are more straight than others. Some talk round, but that's nothing to do with their gender. Some people talk roundabout. So I can honestly say, I mean, I'd like to be able to say women directors have a better grasp of the female condition, but mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, in fact, sexist to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that men can have just as big a grasp of the female condition. Mm-hmm. You don't need a uterus to be able to.
Note to self. Uterus not required. No, it is interesting.
It's a nuisance most of the time.
Please. Again, my dad, 3 women in the room. Sorry, I love you.
Sorry,
I love you. No, it is amazing to me, again, when you're someone where you're there to make it all work. And I hope you teach.
No, I don't.
Please teach them how they need to be.
I always think, I still haven't worked. That's why I don't direct. I'm too busy working out how to do what I do, never mind work out what everybody else mm-hmm. has to do.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing, though, people need to understand certain things. And saying... follow the script because the writer spent all this time writing it that way. And then be free, do what you want, but begin by doing it right, you know, as written. To say I show up on set and I am professional and I will work with anyone and all I want to do is make your movie. These are the things people need to be reminded of because sometimes that gets lost and you'd think it wouldn't because it's the most important part.
Yeah.
But it does.
And to save your bad temper for at home, don't bring it to work.
Right, yeah.
Because it doesn't help anybody.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
We say that. People always ask if my dad ever yells. It's very rare. So when it does happen, you can just see like it's like a record scratch noise. If he actually yells about something, we go, all right, he's mad. Yes. Something has happened.
Well,
he's mad.
You know, my family say that about me. They say she only loses her temper once a year. And I've already done it once this year. I've had my quota for the year.
Your quota is filled.
Yes.
Driving in LA, I think you'd lose it at least 7 times a year, but I understand.
I don't drive in
Wise.
LA.
Ah, there you go.
Wise. Well, that's why she's so happy. That's why you're such a smiley
it's terrible,
person.
Isn't
and she's driving
it?
On the wrong side of the road.
That's right.
To move.
That's right.
That's what it is.
Now, what can you tell us about this television series you've done with Ben Kingsley?
Oh, that was an amazing
great.
Sir
experience.
Ben Kingsley.
Yes. Yeah, he's oh, talk about wonderful. He's brilliant. Here's a bit of trivia. You probably know it, but do you know that funeral scene in Gandhi going back 30 years,
yeah.
is it?
Mm-hmm.
That has the record for the highest number of extras ever on a film set, 400,000.
No, I did not
How
know
about that.
That?
I bet they didn't feed them.
I was going to say, what did that crafty look like? Can you imagine? Everyone gets a cracker.
Isn't
We're all living like Gandhi. You get nothing.
Well,
oh
Ben Kingsley himself told me that. So
my
it
goodness.
Must be true.
Well, if
my
Sir
goodness.
Ben Kingsley says it, then
he's wonderful in the series. It was originally called Our Lady of Perpetual Grace Limited.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the network thought it sounded like a religious program.
Yeah.
So now it's called Perpetual Grace Limited, okay. Which is still a great title.
Oh,
Steve
yeah.
Conrad and Bruce Terrace, who conceived and wrote it, and Steve's... directed quite a lot of it. They are just so clever.
I'm a big fan of Steve Conrad.
Isn't
so
he yeah. wonderful? I love him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's great.
Well, it's given me all the more reason to look forward to that.
It looks beautiful, too.
Wonderful. It's Do you know when we'll be seeing it?
June the 2nd, I think.
Oh, okay.
That's when it starts, and mm-hmm. I think they release one episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there are 10 episodes, one episode mm-hmm. a week.
And what's it on?
It's on Epics.
Epics, okay.
Epics, okay.
There's so many things now that you have to... Is it
I
on
know.
Amazon?
Nobody
or,
could possibly
or,
watch everything
no,
now.
No, no,
no.
Okay, Epics.
But this sounds like it's worth prioritizing,
oh,
though, don't
yeah.
you think?
Perpetual Grace Limited.
It's got also Jimmy Simpson from
mm-hmm.
Westworld.
We love... We've
oh,
had him
great.
On. I love
he's
him.
He's great.
I love
mm-hmm.
him
yeah.
so much.
And Damon Herriman, who's also Australian, he... Mm-hmm. who's just played Charles Manson in 2 films, not in quite important films. One of them, Tarantino's mm-hmm. film about
sure.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the other one in the David Fincher film. He played.
How interesting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Wow.
You walk into
and
a room and someone goes, you look just like Charlie. Anyone ever tell
yes.
you? You remind me of Charlie Manson.
Yeah. It's not a...
yeah, right. Thank
like
you.
My character in Thank you. Animal Kingdom. Not a great person.
Oh not a flattering comparison
yeah,
necessarily.
Right. Thank you. Maybe kind of. I yeah, don't... Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I think of you now at this moment as that very, very upbeat person in Palms.
Oh, good.
Because that's how you strike me. Now, you're playing a character. You're not playing yourself. But your attitude and your outlook, as you've shown it to us here this past hour, is just so infectiously
joyous.
Wonderful.
Joyous.
Oh,
yeah.
thanks.
It is.
Oh,
yeah.
thank you. Oh, sometimes I'm a sad sack.
You, no.
I can be.
Everyone's entitled.
You're
yeah.
a human. You're
yeah.
allowed to do that. But it's a wonderful thing for people to know that when they watch you and they think that you're a wonderful actress, that also is in line with you being a lovely person. It's
oh,
a, it's
thanks.
It's a nice thing for people to know that when they look up to someone, there's a lot to look up to.
Yeah, I'm not Pollyanna. Sometimes I'm a bit of a bitch.
That's okay.
okay.
We are very okay with that. We are very
well,
okay.
Just, I'm glad you left that outside and didn't bring it in today.
My dad used to say, it's terribly English. He was Australian, though. But my mother was English. But they used to say, it is our duty to be cheerful. Which
that is so English.
Yeah. I think it might have been... Oscar Wilde or someone. Mm-hmm. Someone, and it is terribly English. Stiff upper lip and...
Mm-hmm. Everything's fine.
Yes, and be as kind as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And polite.
Yes.
Well, then I will politely thank you,
tell
Jackie,
me to get
for
out
spending,
of here.
No, 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 for spending some time with us today and for bringing good cheer into the room.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've always been a fan of you.
Oh, I'm flattered beyond words.
The first
thank
time
you.
You interviewed me, I thought, I've really made it. truly, it was during the first Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty cute.
I'll not forget that. Do you indulge in social media?
I'm on Instagram, but ooh, it's a private one because I don't want strangers. But I'll give it to you.
No. I wasn't asking selfishly. I was asking for our listeners. They'll just have to make do with going to see you in
7,000 plays,
small
a bunch of different
screen,
movies,
and all of that.
The reason that mine's private, and I let a lot of people I don't know in if they know people that I know, mm-hmm, and I kind of vet them, is because I don't want strangers looking at my grandchildren. That's
right.
All.
That's
very
fair
appropriate. And human. Yes. That's okay.
But we are not so private.
Oh,
where can people find us?
You share your child all the time.
Yes.
you are at Leonard Maltin. I am at Jesse Maltin on Instagram and Twitter. And you can go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
That is all true. Jackie Weaver, thanks once more.
Thank you.
And we'll see you folks next week. Bye-bye. Maltin on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.